Walking in the woods, walking in the woods, walking in the woods with Sean.
And I talk to.
Talking in the woods, talking in the woods, talking in the woods with Sean.
I'm wearing shorts today. It's supposed to be about 80 degrees, and actually I'm also in a little t-shirt, so. Now you know what I'm wearing. Today's actually the first day of a fast, juice fast, that I'm doing, or that's doing me. So today, tomorrow, and the next day, just drinking a lot of juice, homemade, home pressed. It's like carrots and beets and kale and turnips and celery and garlic and onion and some parsley. It looks like after juicing it all together in the juicer machine, it looks like this, it looks like pure beet. It's all beet does that. Beet will take over anything. It's so powerful. That purple. That deep. It's like a killer purple. Yesterday and the day before, apparently, I haven't done a lot of these fasts. Every once in a while, every couple of years. And only since I met Lois, she kind of introduced me to the idea. And it's not really a... I don't do them for food so much, as like a diet. It's not really a diet. It's more that I'm an incredibly addictive person. Like anything, coffee, candy, you know, and then bad things too. And occasionally I get kind of unhinged. And, for me, just doing a little fast like this is a way to, like, put things down. So, for example, I'm also not going on the internet. Or not much. I have to do a couple emails, but I'm very conscious of my internet thing. Not doing the Twitter or the Facebook, although I am doing this, which I wasn't sure I was going to do this recording, because I thought maybe it was... maybe not grounding or something, but I thought I'd try it. To prepare for a fast, like a 3-day juice fast, you sort of switch over a couple days prior so that it's not this huge shock to your system. Like you don't go from Big Mac to beet juice from one meal to the next. So the past couple days it's just been eating fruits, you know, apple and banana for breakfast, and then some like vegetables for lunch, broccoli and carrots, stuff like that. Stop drinking coffee. So I stopped drinking coffee like 3 days ago, and I'm a crazy coffee person. I mean, I get the darkest beans, and I grind them to dust, and then I pour the hottest water on them, and I drink the blackest coffee, and a lot of it. And I've had some headaches and things from sugar and caffeine withdrawal. It's like the last weekend, but you just get a headache, and it's from candy and coffee, not whatever Jack Lemmon was withdrawing from. And actually, you know, I do feel a whole lot more peaceful. You know, I guess I never finished the original thought. I don't fast to diet or anything like that. I do it to stop fidgeting all over the place. To stop, you know, grabbing jelly beans out of the bowl or make coffee or go jump on the internet, that kind of, like, this kind of series of mindless actions that I've gotten into the habit of just, you know, calling my life. So this is a way of, like, this is a way of taking a vacation for myself. And I guess that's a way of taking a vacation for my problems. Because I'm the problem. That's not exactly it. I was in the store today. I had to get turnips so I could make this juice. And it's weird. Turnips and rutabagas look very similar. And at our store, there's a picture to help you above the vegetables. You know, and there's one picture of the turnips, sort of this softball-looking thing with a stalk cut off and a little purple top. And then the rutabaga, which looks like a softball thing with the stem cut off and a little purple top. Very similar looking. And then you look down at them, and so I may be made rutabaga juice. But who cares? I wouldn't know the difference between a turnip and a rutabaga. Those are the kind of vegetables I see them. I can't help but imagine swinging a baseball bat at them. Just watching them explode. Someone slow pitches it in. Just that wet smack. Explosion. That's why Gallagher was so successful. He knew that we had that in us, that we loved it. Smashing vegetables. The bigger the vegetable and the bigger the mallet, the happier we are. I got, there's a sort of folky musician out of Vermont named Sam Amidon, who I like a lot. And I actually got to do a story, like a reading with him and a couple other bands, Red Wing Blackbird and Red Heart the Ticker, a few months ago. And so he has a new album out. I just downloaded it. And maybe take a listen here.
A man of grief, remember me. Thou never canst thyself forget. Thy last expiring agony, thy fainting pangs and bloody sweat. Thy last expiring agony, thy thank you. aside all our compassion. Hands, Jesus, our Lord is crucified. Our Lord is crucified.
So another couple of things that go along with this juice fast. Do some yoga, which, and I also meditate a little bit. Both of things that, you know, I would say, would have said back in my 20s that I never would do. That I was against them. That I knew had no value. I knew that. That's how I felt back then, that these silly this one business of moving your body, stretching and pretending it was anything else was ridiculous, and that, oh, here I go, or that sitting on the floor staring at the wall or the floor itself, that was also a big, you know, waste of time. Nothing there. But now that I've done both of those things and fasted, I see what the point is. So I think when you're young, when you're really young, you're interested in speed, explosions, things hitting each other, that kind of stuff, roller coasters, being frightened, anything that rips you from one place to the other quickly, you know, it can be just movement or psychological thing, that's an interesting feeling to explore when you're young. And when you get older, you know, you don't need to do any more roller coaster rides, really. Maybe you do. I don't know. But you start getting interested in things that are closer together. Things that are slower. Because you notice that there's still something exciting going on. It's just much subtler. So doing, you know, when I was young, I played soccer and ran and did whatever sports. And I loved doing sports. But now, you know, the yoga thing is actually more interesting, a more interesting experience. And partly it's probably because I so underestimated it and thought there was nothing there. So I'm doing for this week really is just slowing down. And going on these walks, as I started a couple weeks ago, is part of that. I say that and then I get email as though Mr. Busy. It's like I'd turned my life into its own version of an energy drink. I was just hyped and amped and tired. I watch this movie, Koyaanisqatsi, about every year. It's an 80 or 90 minute film with music by Philip Glass. I'm trying to remember who the filmmaker is, Godfrey Reggio or something? I don't know if that's right. It's a movie that the first time you see it, after about 10 minutes, you'll just be like, what in the world is this movie that I'm watching? Because it's just music with images, various images, changing images of buildings, clouds, water, cities. And for a while, it feels like nothing. You're just watching this thing. It starts off with like a space shuttle going up, or a rocket going up in slow motion. And then you're out in, you know, the kind of middle western part of the United States with all these mesas and badlands. And then you're suddenly switching to rivers and clouds and skyscrapers, and then people in Times Square moving very, very fast, moving very, very slow. But it's very... After, if you can permit the movie to to continue, it's hard not to stop it, I think, the first time you see it. It's hard to watch it. But if you can stay with it, it becomes... It moves you to a different place. It takes you to this... you almost become sort of like this omniscient thing, this kind of godlike creature watching the earth. So it shifts your sensibility, it almost shifts your identity a little bit, because it shifts your perspective. So there's no main character to identify with. There's just you alone watching all this stuff and listening to this music. And it's just one of those things. It's like an experience that, like a little vision quest or something. It really brings you back down into yourself. It gives you that whole feeling of insignificance, but like valid insignificance, where it's meaningful. It's very meaningful to be as small as you are, and I think it just... It makes you re-honor the universe as it is. Koyaanisqatsi was, you know, the words mean life out of balance, and it's some Indian thing. So it was sort of an expression, I suppose, of life out of balance. Although I didn't really take it that way. I just took it as life. Because to me it didn't seem to have a theme, like a negative theme, just which life without balance seems to imply a negative theme, like we're tearing the earth apart, look at how we're tearing the earth apart. And definitely there are scenes of, you know, destruction, buildings falling, and scenes with giant excavators cutting up the earth, and enormous jets on the runway with their gasoline fumes wrinkling the air. But I didn't take that as any kind of indictment, but maybe they meant it that way. And then there's a lot of scenes of like commercials all compressed, like from TV, old TV commercials as a sequence. And maybe a lot of stuff about how people are very mechanized going through Times Square and through the Grand Central Station. You know, that there's a robotic quality to our life. Maybe. I'm just providing evidence maybe that might be there to, that might have seemed to the filmmakers to express this life out of balance. Because for me, the more powerful expression of the film is just life and earth and us. And I didn't care if there was a message about anything. Because the film itself, because it's so powerful, you're sort of left without the ability to judge. Your judgment is removed in a really powerful, good way. So that when you do see these scenes that might be like something bad that people are doing to the planet, you really don't feel any kind of judgment around it. You might feel like, well, that's not a great thing to do to the planet. But it's more a beautiful expression of humans and, you know, our, how we are. And, you know, there's a good and bad thing to digging up the earth. There's a good and bad thing to building skyscrapers or having jets. Not just that there's a bad thing. I think you feel both sides rather than the bad. So I've been watching that every year or so for, I don't know, last 5 or 6 years, 7 years. There's something that, I have the DVD, and there's a little interview section with Godfrey Reggio, if that's his name, and Philip Glass, separate interviews. But in one of them, Philip, is talking about how he finds the movie powerful because there's a place for the music, there's a place for the film, and then there's a place for the viewer to kind of coexist in this trinity. And that if you look at almost every other thing, there's usually a film, there's music, and the viewer will be somehow squashed out. Because the film will be so powerful, the music will be so overbearing that there isn't any room left for the audience to really actually physically, personally be there. They're sort of pushed out of the room and left to just peek through a little window to watch this enormous spectacle that is a typical movie. And I liked that he explained it like that, because I think that is true. It's like one of the weird things about watching Kinescotsky is you are allowed to be there, and it feels wrong when you're first watching. You're like, you almost feel like you're supposed to do something, or something's expected of you, like there's an obligation or responsibility, and you feel lazy. That's one of the feelings I remember feeling first time I saw it. It was laziness. Like, what does this movie want me to do? Am I just supposed to watch it? Or am I supposed to really be alert? Or whatever? might drive you crazy. Then you just watch it. If you get by the first 10 or 15 minutes, it's probably like doing yoga or meditation. Did I say yogurt? Felt like it. Having yogurt, doing yoga, or doing meditation is kind of like that. Where after 10 or 15 minutes, you sense a little bit of the underlying purpose, and you can sort of permit yourself to continue. You're like, oh, I see. So I feel a little bit like I'm here, finally. Like, I don't need to rush away. I'm okay. You feel your body a little bit, whatever. I think it was last year, or maybe a year and a half ago. But this is a Ron and Fez related story. I had just seen Koyaanisqatsi, and Fez was, as usual, in a really bad place. And Ron started talking about how Fez was... like he needed to go on vacation from his problems, and that his life was out of balance, he was out of whack. And I think there was something that Ron said that was really like very Koyaanisqatsi-ish. like Fez, your life is out of balance. And so because I'd just seen Koyaanisqatsi in the music, and I'd been listening to music in the car, I started singing Fez on the Scotsy while listening in the car driving around.
Fez on the Scotsy. Fez on the Scotsy.
I'm pretty sure they never played it. So another thing that I sent in that they never played, they had a long discussion, I don't know when it was, again, a year and a half, maybe 2 years ago, I can't even remember, about how the Verve's Bittersweet Symphony, that the song rights had, and all the money that the Verve made from that song had gone back to the Rolling Stones, and... I'd heard that story that somehow the Verve had ripped off the Rolling Stones some old song, I can't remember what it was called. And I'd always been curious, and I'd always been angry at the Rolling Stones, because this was the Verve's biggest hit. It's a great song, and the song itself seems like it has a lot of, like, just its own, like, unearthly power. Like, it didn't seem like there could be any theft involved in this song. So I felt like the song was so powerful that it couldn't have been a theft. And I felt like, well, I didn't know what the Verve had been accused of stealing. I assumed it was some little simple, you know, string bit, just like something small. But as it turns out, it's the entire song. So I'll play the Rolling Stones song if I can find it, which was actually really hard to track down on the web for some reason. I'll play a little of that, then I'll play a little of the Bittersweet Symphony. Thank you. So then I thought it would be funny to rewrite the Bittersweet Symphony song as a kind of indictment of the, I can't remember his name, Alan. The producer person who'd been in charge of that song at that time, who was the one that I think instigated the suit. I thought it would be fun to, like, I didn't know if it would be a parody or just kind of a rip at him. So I did my own Bittersweet Symphony version, just cut from the Verve's version. I just stole the music and kind of karaoke'd it, and just wrote some lyrics to kind of trying to get a story going. And aren't you lucky?
Cause it's a verb defeat, victory, Alan Klein. I own the composition rights to the Rolling Stones song The Last Time. It's like a crooked track, me, hey, Mickey, Keith, Grammy time. I was a slave to the money, hey, look here, I just found a dime, yeah. No change, I can't change, I can't change, I can't change, but look here in my hand, Richard here in my hand, looks like a million different dollars from Nike and Box, all I can't change. My mind, no, 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 no.
So just as a reality check, final little bit, talking about, I'm fasting and sort of coming back down to the earth, putting aside these things that, well, maybe they please me in some ways, they also cause me pain, you know, like massive amounts of candy or massive amounts of internet. At the same time, you know, there's still things like I'm walking around with this little handheld device talking rather than being here in nature, walking along this path. You know, I'm not here, I'm in my head, which probably, maybe I shouldn't have done, but I wanted to. And another thing I have with me, when I was sitting in the car, I had a big jug of water, or not a big jug, but a thing of water that I was going to bring with me. But I couldn't fit it in this little hip bag that I've got. So I have a camera, regular kind of, Canon camera of the slightly old, bulky variety. I've got my little Vado video recorder, which is kind of like wallet-sized video recorder. I've got my phone, BlackBerry, and I've got this handheld recorder. So I have four devices and no water. I've got all these batteries with me, but I didn't bring water. I chose to leave the water behind on an hour and a half walk, and instead brought all these devices. But maybe that, you know, maybe that just shows how clearly I need a little bit of Robinson Crusoe, little island. And I guess you can't have that really, although that's always been a dream of mine. I think that's a lot of people dream about that, at least just for a week. Be stranded on a desert island, or not a desert island, a deserted island, or a desert island full of snacks. But I don't want a desert island made of desert. I would like it to be lush with lots of fruits from the trees that I could capture and It would be very easy for me to make a fire, and it wouldn't rain or have a lot of bugs, and I could swim in the beautiful, tropical, warm, blue waters. Sort of like Club Med. They should do that. Another vacation idea that I had was prison. I thought, I've always wanted to be in prison. I've always wanted to escape from prison. And I thought it might be nice to, if Club Med or some other, I don't even know if Club Med's still around, some other kind of vacationing organization, took over some old-fashioned Alcatraz, and you could go stay there, and maybe you could try to break out if you wanted to. Maybe there were secret ways you could do that. Just an interesting puzzle.
All the Palestinians, you're coming around, taking cheers to the baskets of their thorny crowns. And all the Israelis agree to divide the divine up equally. Oh, don't pray for this. Philosophy's perfect apocalypse. The truth is born of pain. Moment by moment and then refrain. All the lost Indians are streaming back from the mountains and the canyons and their broken shacks. And all the old cowboys agree to divide the divine up equally. No, don't pray for this. Philosophy's perfect apocalypse. Truth is born of pain. Moment by moment and then refrain.
Walking in the woods, walking in the woods, walking in the woods with Sean.
And I talk to.
Talking in the woods, talking in the woods, talking in the woods with Sean.